Hello.
Hi there, it's a call from Mr. Carroll.
Hi there.
Hi, Mr. Carroll. It's Daniel here calling from MMA Legal's investigations team. How are you today?
I'm good, Daniel.
Good,
Thanks.
good, good to hear. So just before we continue, I'll just take you through data protection quickly. Have the first line of your address, please.
It's 13 Memo Road.
Brilliant. Your email address?
CarolPaul1984@gmail.com.
Brilliant. And just your date of birth, please.
13th of the 4th, 1984.
Brilliant. Cheers for that, Paul. So yeah, today I was just going through your file. Of course, we were planning to do the witness statement today. I just wanted to go through a few things beforehand, because I've gone through all of your records and your police records, the prison records, and I just wanted to confirm a few things with yourself. So we've got it down as HMP Barlinnie. Your start date was the 21st of January 2002, and you were 17 at the time of entering there. And then that was up until the 29th of January 2002. And then there was another placement in HMP Barlinnie on the 28th of August. Does that sound about right?
Think for me, it's just a long time back.
Yeah, no, of course, of course. So the thing being I needed to speak to you about before conducting the witness statement was there is only a 9-day period when you were under the age of 18 with HMP Barlinnie. So those 9 days are all that we can review under the witness statement. So just wanted to confirm with you that obviously you do still feel like you did suffer abuse within those 9 days at HMP Marlini. Yeah, right. All right. Not a problem at all. So let me get up the witness statement. Right, Paul. So just before we begin, just need to let you know that you're in full control of the call today. If you need to take a break, you want to skip a question or ask me to reword anything, just please let me know. If you want to go away, go outside, take a smoke, get yourself a drink, just please do say, and we can do that. Or if you want to come away from the call, let me give you a call back even, if things are getting too much to talk about. Just let me know, like I say, and we can take a quick break. All right, Paul. So with that being said, do you? Oh, one, sorry.
The 9 days, is there, will there still be, will you still pursue that?
Yeah, if like you say, after we conduct the witness statement today, if you are if you tell me about your time in Barlinnie, those first 9 days, obviously entering in for the first time, if you're confident that you did suffer abuse in these days and you are coming forward to tell me in that witness statement about that abuse, then yeah, you would still fall within the catchment area of Scottish redress. It's just any time after those 9 days doesn't fall within the Scottish redress scheme just because you were over the age of 18 at that time. So, like I say, there is still an area where you could be successful with your application. Of course, it just would be within those first 9 days at Barlinnie. All right. So, with everything being said, are you happy and comfortable to continue the witness statement today? Right. Brilliant. And do you need anyone with you at all while we conduct the statement? No. Right. And do you understand the purpose of the statement and agree that it may be used for your Scottish redress application? Yes. Brilliant. Okay. So moving into the actual witness statement, I'll just give you a quick breakdown on how I run it through. So firstly, it's just going to be a quick overview of your personal background, your life, what your life was like before entering care. After that, it's going to be just a quick confirmation of your care placement chronology. So just confirming the dates and times that you were in care. And after that, we'll be doing a full breakdown of your time at Barlinnie, or the 9 days that you were there in Barlinnie, anything that you can tell me about that time. And after that, it'll just be an impact section on how you feel like that time in Barlinnie has affected you coming out of care. All right, Paul. So firstly, we're just going to do the personal background and entry into care. So before going into care, where was it that you grew up and who did you live with before care?
I grew up in Glasgow and grew up with my mother and father and my older brother.
Do apologize if there's any silence during the call. It's just me typing in the notes, making sure I get everything. So I've got, I grew up in Glasgow with my mother, father, and older brother. And what was your life like before care? What was the home life like?
A happy home, I had love and was cared for quite well in society.
Yeah. And how was it that you came to enter care, and who made the decision, and were you told why?
I think I was charged with an assault or something like that, and it was a court that ordered it. Obviously, but when we were back then, we were young offenders in an adult jail.
Right.
And I'm actually in recovery. Is your name Daniel?
It is, yes.
Daniel, I'm in recovery now. I'm recovering from alcoholism and drugs.
Yeah.
And this has just came to light. And once I've been doing the steps with my sponsor, and I start to tell him my background, he says, "You shouldn't have been in that jail, and the stuff that happened to you is morally wrong." And
Yeah.
that's why I'm I got onto this. He put me in touch with.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That makes perfect sense, of course. Hopefully, with those first few days in the prison, we will be able to help you with the Scottish Redress application, of course. So.
You think it'll still be successful even though it's only 9 days that you can claim for?
Yeah, it's any time whilst you were in care, before pre-2004, under the age of 18, any sort of care settings. So we do have it on the record that you were with Barlinnie. It's just obviously there was, a very short period before you turned 18, in that setting. And unfortunately, any time after you were 18 wouldn't fall into the catchment area of Scottish Redress's scheme. So, do you know who made the decision on why you were put into care? So you said it was due to an assault charge. Who was it that made the decision? Obviously, it was the courts. Which court was that?
It'll be the Glasgow Sheriff Court.
Glasgow Sheriff Court. Okay, and did you have any siblings at the time that you were separated from?
My brother.
Okay, and when you first went into Barlinnie, how did you feel at the time?
Fearful. It's a daunting setting. Berlin. and obviously all the adults in about you as well, it's an eye-opener.
Yeah.
I don't actually think it was a right decision to put me in that environment as a young man with one of the other men.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And is there anything important about your childhood health, such as learning needs, vulnerability, or name history that should be recorded?
No.
Okay, so the next section, that's the personal background entering to care completed. So the next section is just a confirmation of your care placement chronology. So I've got it, the HMP Barlinnie, and that was the 21st of January 2002 up until the 29th of January 2002.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to the compact placement sheet. So this is going to be talking about your time in HMP Marlini. Of course, anything that you experienced within those first 9 days in Marlini and what sort of effects it had on you, you know, any sort of examples you can give me of what you remember of your first 9 days would be really helpful here in this section of the witness statement. Of course, all in your own words. So what type of setting was it and how long were you there for? Of course, some of the questions might feel a little bit repetitive. I just need to get it out of your own words and just confirm that we've covered everything from that time. All right. So I know it's the type of setting. It was a prison setting, was it?
Yeah.
And put it down for the 9 days. And just in a few sentences, Paul, what was your ordinary daily life like?
On arriving to prison?
Yeah.
On arriving, I was assaulted on the bus. There was a bus where you used to get chained to all different people. It's not like the buses they have today where it's individual.
Yeah, right. Well, just to reel it back a little bit, we'll move on to any sort of abuse that you covered. I'm going to get onto that in a couple of questions. Just so that we cover everything in there at the moment, I just need to know what was so ordinary daily life, such as your routines, what time were you waking up in the morning, was food provided for you, was clothing provided, you know, basic hygiene essentials, things like that, Paul?
Trying to adjust to that sort of life, I never slept well. Obviously there's other prisoners there who are mocking you and things like that because you're first in and you're a first offender.
Yeah.
You used to get like small kits. I would get dirty small kits provided to me, that's like underwear and things like that. So they were giving me stuff that had already been worn and it had skid marks and things on it, and my dinners had pubes in them.
Right. So what was the things like your school work in there? Were you provided with some sort of education, anything
no.
like that?
No.
Yeah.
Was locked up.
Yeah.
Most of the day.
So how long did you have to spend in your cell?
23 hours a day, I think.
Sorry, how many hours was that?
23. A bit longer. Trying to get up much.
Yeah. So the hour that you were allowed out yourself, what was that for?
That was for exercise, but I didn't go out to exercise, obviously, because I was fearful.
Yeah.
Most of the day I was locked up.
So the food, you mentioned something about the food before.
There was pubes in my dinners.
There was pubic hairs in your dinners.
Yeah.
So in terms of the staff and the other inmates in Barlinnie, how did they generally treat you there?
Not very good, to be honest. I was the prisoners were sort of bullying me, and prison officers were. But when I look back now, there was things that were said to me that were morally wrong. I was coming out the showers, and a prison officer had complimented on my penis, and it's not you get a bit older, you think, why would he say something like that?
Yeah.
Wrong. Other sexual advances for prison officers, and I don't know if they were trying to intimidate me or what they were doing, or if it was a genuine thing towards me. I don't know. I was a young man. I don't understand.
Yeah, of course.
But I know that it's wrong.
Yeah, things that don't make sense to a young man at all.
No. Being locked up with drug users. There were a lot of drugs about, and I wasn't really introduced to drugs then, but obviously being in here, you start using these things because that's the environment you're in.
Yeah.
Another inmate went and peed in my shoe. And I was having to wear my shoe when it had pee in it.
Yeah. And were you provided with like washing facilities? So after that happened, another inmate urinated in your shoe. Were you able to go and then clean that?
No. A lot of emotional trauma for that, Daniel.
Yeah. So I'm just going to be moving on to the next section now, which is going to cover all of the sections of abuse. So just give me a second there to finish typing up the notes of the how the staff and the other inmates treated you. Okay, so yeah, moving on now.
One of the prison officers went and held the genitals and says, "What would you do to that if I let you as well?"
Held his genitals, you said.
Yep. He says, "What would you do to that if I let you?" I know
Okay.
that. I know that's not right either.
No, it's definitely a form of abuse. So, yeah, so in terms of the abuse that you received, so we're going to go through this section by section, being different types of abuse. I'll just go through with you the different types of abuse and different things that could be considered of those types of abuse. So the first one would be neglect. So some different examples of neglect would be that food was being withheld, or you were not provided with adequate clothing. You know, your cell wasn't up to a certain standard of warmth. You know, you had warm showers that you could take, even such things as supervision? Were you supervised when you should be, you know, being under the age of 18? You're supposed to have a certain level of supervision. So with that being said, can you give me any sort of examples of neglect that you experienced in Barony?
I suffered in silence. I was definitely needing more care. There was no people coming to me when I was within myself. I didn't want to come out of that cell.
Yeah.
The clothes that I was receiving, underwear, were, you used to get a knitted bag and it was socks and pants, and I was getting ones that were dirty, so I was getting abused there
Yeah.
mentally. I would get offered a shower now and again because I was fearful.
Yeah.
My food that was coming, it wasn't clean. I wasn't able to eat the actual dinners. The only things that I was eating was like a packet of crisps that would come with the packs.
Yeah.
But it was just things that were sealed that I was eating because I know the dinners were getting tampered with.
Yeah.
And then the cons that were giving them out, and they were enjoying seeing that pain, I think, going there.
Yeah. Okay, so in terms of other types of abuse that you may have received in Barony, so we'll move on to the emotional abuse that you feel like you've received. So emotional abuse, as a few examples, would be things like humiliation, blame, name calling, you know, made to sit on your own in your cell on your own. That would be a form of isolation.
Yep.
So with that being said, could you give me a few examples of any sort of emotional abuse that you suffered in Barony?
Bullying from both cons and guards, name calling, make me feel low, worthless, and the isolation of that, and no one to come out myself because I knew I was going to endure pain from them,
Yeah.
both physical and mentally.
Yeah.
Aye. Inflicted emotional and physical pain on me, and I know that's not right today.
No, not at all.
And it's had a dramatic effect on my full life.
Yeah. Yeah, not to worry, Paul. We will we do have a full section to do with your impact and how you feel like it's affected you later on in life. Just want to make sure that we get everything down from the current section. So things like still forms of abuse. So got everything down there that you've told me about the emotional abuse. So Nextly, did you experience any sort of physical abuse in Barony?
Yes.
And can you give me an example of physical abuse that you suffered in Barony?
I was attacked by other clones.
You mentioned before that happened on the bus,
Yeah.
on the way there, yeah.
Yeah. Also in the halls as well.
Yeah. So the attack that took place on the prison, just to get the full picture, so that we don't miss anything off there. So before the attack took place, what was happening on the bus?
The bus, it was a bit of bullying, and obviously they knew I was the first time in, and they sort of jumped on that, and I said something back to them, one of them jumped and punched me in the nose,
Right.
my nose.
And was it just the one that jumped on you and assaulted you, or was there multiple involved? Just the one.
One.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you mentioned about being attacked in the halls as well.
Was at recreation. I went to recreation one night and we were playing pool, and I can't remember what was said. Well, another guy attacked me.
And what happened after they attacked you?
I think they got into trouble off with officers or whatever. So I got put back myself. Officer attacked me one time as well, grabbed me by the throat. I was on my buzzer trying to get the phone. And they grabbed me by the throat when they opened the door and pinned me against the wall.
So you said an officer attacked you when you were trying to make a phone call?
I was on the buzzer for to get out to use the phone, and he opened the door, grabbed me by the throat, and he says, I told you to stop pressing that buzzer. Well, I don't understand that. How are you supposed to get the phone if you don't press the buzzer?
Yeah. When he attacked you, what did he do? Was he punching you? Was he kicking you at all?
Just elbowed me in the face and grabbed me by the throat, pinned me against the cell wall. Obviously, there's cameras in the hall, so he's done it when the camera would miss him.
Yeah. Okay, so that would have covered the physical abuse section. And moving on, was there any sort of sexual abuse that you experienced at Barlinnie? So any sort of sexual touching or exposure to things that you shouldn't have been exposed to?
Well, sexual comments and propositions, aye. That officer making me rub arts to my penis when I was coming out of the shower. Well, that's not right. That's sexual abuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously the other officer grabbed me genitals and said, what would you do to that if you get out this weekend?
Right.
That's sexual abuse as well, in my opinion.
Yeah. Is there any other forms of sexual abuse that you were exposed to at Barlinnie at all?
In the visit room, obviously, when you're in there, you're running about all these other men, like older men, and they're making remarks to you. And
yeah. You said this happened in the shower room, did you say?
Aye. But when I was going to a visit, there's obviously, you're in a visit room and you're with other men that are maybe 30, 40 years old, and they're all laughing and making remarks to you. And
yeah.
sexual,
yeah,
sexual things, and it's abuse as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think we should have been exposed when about other men who were sexual.
No.
They were in for sexual crimes and things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so in terms of who you feel was involved or responsible for these examples of abuse, could you provide me with any sort of names or just the roles and descriptions of the staff?
They were just officers. I can't really remember their names that bad.
Yeah. No, that's fine, Paul. Don't worry. So you believe that it was the officers that were the main perpetrators involved,
yeah,
and responsible? Yeah. Okay, so the next question is just asking to give one clear example of where and when it occurred. I have made a note of everything you've told me before in the previous section. Just want to get one clear example of any sort of abuse that you experienced at Barlinney, and things like where it happened and when it occurred.
When it occurred?
Yeah, so not obviously the exact time and date. It's sort of like when in the day. So did it happen at night time? Did it happen in the morning? Things like that.
It was that time when the prison officer had elbowed me in the mouth and grabbed me. That was in the afternoon when I was trying to get out to use the phone, and I kept pressing the buzzer. My buzzer light would go off and they would be looking through my spy hole and laughing and not letting me out. And then eventually he opened the door and elbowed me in the mouth and grabbed me by the throat. And he says, I told you to stay off that buzzer.
Yeah.
And that was to get out for the phone. So that's physical abuse. And it's emotional abuse.
Yeah. Said he was before he came into the cell, he was looking through the spy hole and he was laughing at you, he said.
Yeah.
And did this happen in your cell? You said it happened in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay, and in terms of things like that happening in Barlinney, how often would you say that it happened?
Very often, it was brief.
Do you feel like it's changed at all the things that were happening on, or possibly became worse.
I think it was coming worse.
Okay, so in terms of the effects that you experienced after these actions happened, what sort of immediate effects did you experience, such as pain, any fear, shame, sleep problems, bedwetting, things like that?
Yeah, I've never slept after it. Trauma, fear, isolation, scared.
Yeah.
Had a dramatic effect on me. My mental health. Childhood trauma, innit?
Sorry, Paul.
Childhood trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of your behaviour whilst you were in there, did you become sort of quite erratic at all? You know, did you just become quite anxious? You wanted to avoid any sort of situations?
Very anxious. Tried to stay away from any sort of potential incidents and tried to stay away from people, isolated. And I was on high alert. Fearful. I just didn't know what was happening. A volatile environment.
Yeah. And did anyone else witness this or know about it or experience something similar?
A lot of the boys were getting this sort of treatment from officers. It was happening regular.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, when you're in the jail, nobody wants to be grassing an MD, so people just tolerated it.
Yeah.
And you're in there under the... Yeah. These guards are supposed to be protecting you and they're abusing you.
Yeah. And at the time, did you tell anyone or try to get help about the things that was happening?
No, I couldn't tell MD because I didn't want my family worried about what I was going through.
Yeah.
And obviously, I didn't want to feel weak and talk to other prison officers, people in the prison about it. I was just hoping it would go away.
Yeah. Now, is there, just before we move on, is there anything else that you want to tell me about your time at Barlinnie? Any sort of other examples that you want to get off your chest and tell to redress?
No, just a lot of drug taking and a bit of things like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it.
All right, Paul. So moving on to the next section of the witness statement, it would be the people involved and the reporting and institutional knowledge. So across all the placements, so it'd just be your time in Balvenie there, who were the main people responsible, do you feel like, for the abuse that you suffered?
Prison officers and other people in prison. Mostly prison officers, but they had a duty of care to look after me and put me in a safe environment, and I didn't get that.
And I know you mentioned before about this, but were any other children affected, and did you witness abuse or harm to anyone else?
Yeah, I've definitely seen other boys getting the same sort of treatment.
And why do you believe the staff or institution knew about what was happening in Barlinnie? And do you think they should have known, and what was happening to do to change the things that was happening, if anything?
There wasn't any changes happening, and I think all the other prison officers were quite aware of what was going on. They contributed to it. I've seen all different ones participating in different wreckage.
Right. And in terms of complaints, so I know you mentioned before you felt like you couldn't speak up about the things that was happening in prison. So, in terms of complaints, do you feel like they were discouraged at all, or do you feel as though you'd be punished if you were to complain about the sort of things that were happening there?
If I was to make any sort of formal complaint, I know I would have got worse treatment.
And the next question is just, have you ever reported the abuse to police, an inquiry, a professional, or any authority about what happened?
No, but I've shared it with my sponsor.
Sorry, you shared it with who? Sorry.
No, I've got a sponsor. I'm in recovery.
All right. Okay, so the next section is just it's a section that might not be relevant to yourself. It's about your movement between placements and leaving care. So it'd just be the first question that'd be relevant to yourself, actually. So in terms of going into care initially, were the reasons explained to you onto why you were being put into the place that you were put in?
Well, obviously it was because of crime I committed.
And did you try to run away, refuse to return, or ask to be moved at all?
No, I've never had that option.
Yeah. And in terms of coming out of prison, when and at what age did you leave?
When I left for Lenny.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I must have been. How? I don't know. I can't remember.
We can take when you just came out of the prison system in general. How old were you at that point?
36.
36. And what were your circumstances like after coming out at 36?
Well, I've had battles with addiction
Yeah.
and cause of the pain and trying to numb the pain of what I've endured in life, and I turn to drinking now and drugs.
Yeah.
I've been in recovery for 4 years. Obviously, I've been in and out of the jail all my life.
Yeah.
And I've found a solution to living, and it's in the fellowship. And I try and pass my message on to other people.
Yeah.
But I've had my mental health dramatically affected with prison and being institutionalised and
Yeah, absolutely.
all the trauma I've went through in life. And I tried to mask that trauma with drinking drugs.
So the next section that we're going to be moving on to is the impact section. So, in terms of the impact, it might again feel a little bit repetitive with the questions that I'm asking, or you might feel like you've already covered it in the call. It's just so I get the notes in the right section, and we definitely cover everything today, Paul. All right. So the first question is, how did the experience affect you at the time? Any sort of safety issues that you had, trust issues, things like your confidence, things like that?
All of them affected all every part of that. Fear, a little bit of fear, made me feel low.
Yeah.
Traumatic experiences. It's got a big impact on your life going forward.
Yeah.
And running over events that happened and
And in terms of your education, how was your education coming out of the prison system? Do you feel as though that was heavily affected?
yeah, I never got any education in the system. Systems failed me.
Yeah. And in terms of your relationships and ability to speak up, how do you feel as though your time at Barlinnie affected your you know, your relationships or your ability to speak up about that time?
It's affected me dramatically, Daniel, because for 24 years I was in addiction. I can only start to talk now because I've found a solution to living in the fellowship. And I talk about these things, not these events, but I talk about my life and how it can help others today. And I suffered in silence for years. My mental health was dramatically affected. I've had a few attempts in my life. I've suffered with anxiety and depression my whole life. I'm on medication. Sleepless nights, post-traumatic stress disorder.
So in terms of things like relationships, have you had any relationships since coming out of prison, and do you feel like that time has affected those relationships at all?
Yes, definitely. It's affected my family life. Any relationship I've had with a woman, it's affected them.
Yeah.
I've got a daughter at 12 as well, it affected her. Early on in these ones in Berlin, it's been the foundation of a young man coming into society, and it's had a dramatic effect on me, the way I was treated.
So I know you've you just brushed on this just shortly. But how has it affected your mental health then, including, you know, things like anxiety, depression?
I've suffered with my whole life. My doctor's report will tell you that.
Yeah.
I've been on medication for a long time. I take antidepressants every day. I need to take a sleeping tablet to sleep because I'm tormented by my past, with abuse that I endured. I need to take a tablet every night before I sleep, or else I just run over events that happened.
Yeah.
To torture myself.
And you mentioned before that there's been a couple of times where you've tried to take your own life.
Yep.
Yeah. And again, such as your physical health, things like sleep, any chronic pain that you've got, such as back pain, you know, alcohol and substance abuse. Could you just tell me briefly about how it's affected you in those ways?
Obviously, I turned to alcoholism to deal with the pain that I was enduring mentally. And I was an alcoholic for 20, well, I'm still an alcoholic, but I was performing for 24 years with alcohol and drugs and numb the pain that I endured in my prison life. Until 2022 when I went to the fellowship, so I've been clean and sober since then.
That's really good to hear, Paul.
But the trauma will never go away.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be recovered from trauma. I know that.
Yeah.
I had to go and get outside help
place called SPARC in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And it's deals with trauma counselling. And I've had to go to that because of what I endured. Alcoholics Anonymous can help you with your drinking, but it can't help you with all the other stuff that I endured.
Yeah, with the mental health sort of things, no. Yeah. And I know you mentioned before about it affecting any sort of relationships you've had. It's affected your family relationships and your daughter. How has it affected them in this way?
Sometimes I struggle to live a free life without being tormented by the past.
Yeah.
And I go within myself, I isolate, and I can't give them every bit of me. It's good, and I'm suffering. I suffer in silence and isolating. I can't. It's just a numbness. It's hard to explain.
Yeah. No, you are explaining it really well, Paul. And in terms of your work, confidence, your opportunities, things like your finances, you know, things like housing, your day-to-day stability, how do you feel like it's affecting you in those ways?
Well, I still stay with my mother and father. Just because it's a safe place for me. I don't feel safe in society.
Yeah. And are there any sort of triggers, such as places, smells, authority figures, institutions, or situations that you avoid?
Oh, definitely. I try and avoid the jail as much as I can. I've not went back since I've got sober, so.
Yeah.
That, I try and not watch anything on the telly. It's to do with prisons because it brings back trauma. Loud noises and doors slamming can trigger me, take me back to that place. I know it's PTSD.
Yeah.
And it's trauma, and I'm in high alert all the time, and it's tiring.
Yeah. So, just overall, Paul, what impact would you feel like this has had on your life overall, and what do you think may have been different if it had not happened?
Well, it's had a dramatic impact on my life, definitely.
Yeah.
It's made me live with shame, live with fear all my life. Running over all the events that's happened to me and tormented with the past.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll ever get out of it. This is the thing, Daniel. I don't know because it's been a long time and it's still very vivid memories, and I can go there quite often, and it's restricted me in living a free life and being able to be live to my full potential.
Yeah.
It's restricted me in society. I've always felt less than.
And in terms of things you feel might have been different if this had not happened, what sort of things do you feel will be different, or would be different, sorry?
Well, a bit more care from people who treated me bad, a bit more concern about people's welfare.
Yeah.
I suffered in that jail. And a young man, it's had a dramatic effect on the rest of my life. I could never have experienced that sort of trauma as a young man.
Yeah, no.
They had a duty of care, and they never fulfilled that. They abused me.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's the end of the impact section of the witness statement. Is there anything else about your impact that you feel like we haven't covered at all that you'd like to make me to make a note of?
No.
Okay, so moving on to the next section is the support and treatment section. So in terms of the counselling and therapy, I know you've mentioned before you are doing counselling for your mental health. So have you ever received counselling, therapy, mental health, addiction, GP, hospital or other professional support at all?
Yes.
You said it was your counselling for mental health.
I've had counselling, I've had mental health nurses, I've had occupational therapists, I've had turn around at a place that helps you with alcoholism. I'm now an Alcoholics Anonymous. Trauma counselling.
And have you been diagnosed with any relevant condition, and have you taken any related medication?
Any what medication?
Related medication. So the diagnosis that you've had from your doctors, it's just the medication that you've been prescribed for those conditions.
PTSD, I'm on mirtazapine, depression, anxiety. I'm on mirtazapine every night. I take that to sleep and to deal with my mental state.
Yeah. Is there any other medication that you're taking?
I took propranolol.
Propranolol.
Took what's the other one that gave me? Sertraline.
Sertraline. Okay, are you receiving support now? So currently, do you still have a counsellor for your mental health? Any sort of support that you're receiving currently?
I have the support of the fellowship. I have the support of it's called Spark. He's a trauma counsellor.
Right. And if it's just asking in the same question, if you delayed seeking help, what made it difficult to seek help?
Didn't speak up a bit more?
Yeah, sorry, I do apologise. So it just says, if you delayed seeking help after your time in Barlinnie, what made it difficult for you to seek help?
Just the shame and the abuse that I had endured. I didn't want to feel weak, and you know, I was struggling, and I just had addiction to deal with the pain.
Yeah. Okay, that's the support and treatment section completed now, Paul. So we are coming to the last few sections now. Do apologise about the length of the phone call, of course. We just want to make sure we cover everything.
Yeah.
So the evidence and supporting information is the next section. So have you got any sort of siblings, relatives, friends that could provide a supporting statement at all?
No, I don't know. Don't tell them anything.
Right.
Obviously, everybody knows about my mental health and things like that.
Yeah.
But the events, they can't clarify that. They weren't there.
Yeah. And so your next section is just asking about any sort of previous claims or applications that you've made. So have you ever made any sort of claims against the abuse? No.
No.
So you've not received any sort of settlements and any payments or apologies? No.
No. I don't even know if I'll get a payment for this, will I?
Well, like I say, there is a period where you were under the age of 18, so you do still apply for that period. So the next section is just a quick brief overview of why you are applying to the redress scheme and what would you like to come from telling your story.
Obviously, I'm able to talk up about this now because I'm in recovery and I know it's no right. I don't want anybody else to endure what I went through. People in these positions have got a duty of care and they're not withholding that.
Yeah.
They're abusing people. And I don't want anybody to get through what I went through. Much as I was in there for a reason, I should never have been subjected to what I went through. It's no right, but it's morally wrong in this day and age.
And in terms of an acknowledgement, what would that mean to you?
What's that? Can you please explain that a bit better for me, please?
An acknowledgement, yeah. So once the application's been processed, an acknowledgement would be obviously a formal acknowledgement from redress as well as your compensation. So what would that mean to you to receive that?
Oh, well, just... Well, no, it's not going to make much difference to me, but maybe we may be... Maybe I'll be able to do something with my daughter or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Money's not going to take away the pain that I've endured, Daniel.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's not going to take it away. I've still got to live with this trauma.
Yeah. And is there anything else that you want Redress Scotland to understand about what happened or the harm that you live with?
I'd like them to know what's going on behind the doors isn't acceptable. That should be a safe environment for young people, and they're not getting treated the way they should be getting treated. It's not tolerated. It shouldn't be tolerated in this day and age.
Yeah. Okay, so we are coming to the end of the witness statement now. We've got all of the relevant notes. I just want to make sure that you do feel like we've covered everything today. Do you feel like there's any sort of wording that you wanted handled carefully or...
Right, brilliant.
And how are you feeling after today's phone call? Obviously, we've discussed quite a lot of your time in care.
I feel a bit flat, to be honest, Daniel.
Feel flat.
Aye.
Yeah. Is there someone that you can contact after this phone call just to speak to?
Aye, my mum's doing this day, and I'll go and talk to my mum, have a cup of tea, will I?
Yeah. That's good. And have the next steps been explained to you?
No.
So the next steps after we've conducted the witness statement, I'll be bundling that up after I've written it up into the cover letter. You're going to receive this bundle on an email. We just need you to sign after you've reviewed everything and agree with everything that's on the witness statement, of course. Just need you to sign, send that back to us, and then once we have that back, we can book you in for an ID verification call. That's just with a head solicitor and our manager, Jay. That's literally just a quick video call, no longer than a minute long, just with you holding up your ID.
Yeah.
After that, the application goes through to Redress Scotland, and there is a 4 to 8 week waiting period to hear back from that application. All right, Paul.
Okay.
Right. So, do you feel confident that that you know what the next steps now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Brilliant. All right, Paul. Well, like I say, that's the end of our witness statement today. I really appreciate you giving me your time. And once we have the witness statement written up and bundled, you'll receive that copy in an email. All right.
Yeah, good man. Thanks, Simon.
No problem at all, Paul. I'll let you go now. You enjoy your cup of tea with your mother, and enjoy the weekend as well. All right.
Cheers, mate.
All right. No problem, Paul. See you now.
Bye-bye, mate.